This is a HeadGum Podcast.
I want to tell you about Nature Box. Oh, yeah. Oh, come on now. You know what we're talking about. We're talking about that Nature Box, baby. You know the Gilmores like to snack, and you probably like to snack, too, because you want to be a Gilmore. We all do. So go get a Nature Box, man. You know what Nature Box is. Nature Box has the most delicious snacks on the planet. Nature Box makes your snacking dreams a reality and will change the way you snack forever. You gotta get them Pop-Pops. You gotta get that jalapeno white cheddar popcorn. It's all so good, babies. Start now. You can do weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, bi-monthly, tri-monthly. There's so many options. I probably made up a few just now. But do it. Nature Box is full of the flavor, but without any of the junk. It's just fun, flavorful snacks made with ingredients that you can trust. And they got a smart snack guarantee, so if you don't love anything, you're like, F this S, pardon my letters. But if you're ever like that, you can let the Nature Box folks know, and they'll replace it in your next month's box for free. It's easy and satisfying, much like myself. I've probably said that before. So go to naturebox.com/Gilmore, guys, for your first box on them. It's a special offer. You gotta act facts. You have to act like a fax machine. So be like, beep, boop, beep, boop. Naturebox.com/Gilmore, guys. Go there right now to unbox a world of taste and possibility. And one last time, that's naturebox.com/Gilmore, guys, for your first box of Beyond Tasty hand-picked snacks sent direct to your door. Stay up. Nature Box. Yum, yum, yum. Nom, nom, nom. On with the show.
Here we go.
No, that absolutely is the right thing.
That's not it. No.
New York City.
La 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 la. Ooh, deep.
La 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 la
la la la la la la la la la la of volume 6. Thankfully, we're starting to do these more and more.
Yeah.
Because we always say we're going to do them, and we never do. Like two young men breaking their promises.
Yeah, exactly that.
Writing checks with their mouth that their podcast can't cash. We're going to try to stop doing that now. Welcome. This is a very special episode of Gil Mail, guys. We're recording in New York City. Demi, did your cell phone go off?
That wasn't me.
What? Oh, that was mine. Oh, dag.
The accuser.
Yeah, you pleaded the shaggy on that one, didn't you?
Wasn't me.
Oh, you know what? So usually for these episodes, we do them solo, just the two of us, much like the Will Smith song. But is that Will Smith's song?
It is.
He wrote it, right?
Yeah, to his son, Jaden.
Daddy loves you. Daddy loves you. That's the one part I remember of that song. But I will say, for today, we do have a special guest. So let's introduce him right now.
La la.
Yeah.
La la. A special guest.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you may know him from the hit podcast Reply All. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Alex Goldman.
Woo! Here I am.
Here you are. Wow. Alex, yay, thank you for joining us so much.
Thank you for having me. This is like, we are realizing a dream being on the show.
Yeah, talk about that dream. Talk about the journey to get here, because we're actually sitting in the middle of Gimlet headquarters right now recording the podcast. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you can absolutely say that.
Well, okay, cool.
Part of it is that I lobbied relentlessly to be on it. I mean, you guys may have seen me on Twitter trying to corral the fans of my podcast into convincing you guys to put me on your show.
And it worked, man.
Yeah, it did. It's very exciting.
So it just goes to show, if you tweet at us a million times, yeah, you'll have come on the show.
It helps if you get other people to do it for you.
Well, the truth of it is, we love Alex and we love the Reply All podcast. It's so good. If you haven't listened to it, check it out. What would be like your elevator pitch of Reply All? Not that you need to sell it to any new listeners, because it's like a mega hit, but...
Wow, this is very flattering. I like being on this show. It's a podcast about the internet, but it's not a podcast about technology. It's about it's like, if I had to give it a simple log line, it would be like This American Life about the internet, maybe.
But you and PJ are like Ira Glass.
We're like Ira. We're nothing like Ira Glass. We're like bratty children.
Did you know Ira Glass is a gilly?
I did, actually.
Isn't that funny?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
That guy's a ghillie. He was in the Veronica Mars movie. He's just living the life.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that he played himself in the Veronica Mars movie.
I have a friend who was in that movie. Actually, one of our producers was in that movie, and you can see her in the background missing her. She's misses her position and she stops and backs up. She's like very much in the background, but she's like supposed to walk to a certain point.
Yeah.
She doesn't quite get it. So then she just sort of walks backwards and they just left it in the movie. It's great.
That's so good. That's like, it probably just looks like a weird secret, like public radio walk step, or like it's like a secret handshake.
But she's just
like
doing that dance that they
weird
do.
The public radio dance. Well, Alex, if you will, give us like kind of the full journey of how you got into the show, Gilmore Girls.
So in like 2003, maybe 2004, I was living in Denton, Texas. Maybe you guys are familiar.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Plenty of friends there.
And
wait, are you from Texas, Alex?
I'm not. Okay. But I was living there. I was dating someone who had just graduated from UNT. So I was living in Texas, didn't really have a job. So I got this job working at the Denton State School, which is an institution for the mentally disabled. And after everything wound down for the night, we would just sit around and watch TV until our shift ended. And it was like I'd gotten into Veronica Mars, and I think that led into or was immediately preceded by Gilmore Girls at the time.
This must have been 2004, because if it was Veronica Mars, I don't think that came on until 2004. I could be wrong about that.
Okay. So I was watching Veronica Mars, and then Gilmore Girls would come on, or vice versa, and I was like, "Oh, I can get into this.
Yeah,
I'm feeling this."
Okay.
And then my boss would come in and put on Tyler Perry DVDs.
As like an anecdote.
It wasn't even like an anecdote. I would be in the middle of it, and he'd be like, "Nope, we're done."
Oh, in the middle of an episode. No,
it's time for Tyler Perry.
Oh, dang!
I want to figure out how Madea goes to jail.
This was before he had made movies, too. This was just the stage plays. It was just DVDs and stage plays.
My mom owns all of those. And often I will come home and she'll be in the middle of watching one and pause it to come and hug me.
Wait, was Tyler Perry's career trajectory stage plays to movies to
Star Trek?
To Star Trek.
Yes.
To Alex Cross, to Gone Girl.
Gone Girl.
To owning an island.
Does he owns an island?
He does. I know a lot about Tyler Perry, guys.
How?
I started a Tyler Perry podcast.
No. What's it called?
Tyler Pod Carry.
Uh-oh.
Perry Pals?
Perry Pals. We haven't settled on the name yet.
Perry Pals.
Madea goes to the web.
Madea goes to the web. Madea goes to the top of the iTunes charts. You know, so one thing we did call on, and thanks again, Alex, for doing this so much. We wanted to do an episode with you, but with our recording schedule, it didn't work out that we would be able to do an episode with you. So we wanted to bring you in just for a general discussion. So I thought we could just kind of take this time, look back, have a general discussion of the show, as well as getting to listener emails and voicemails and whatnot, and just hear what the ghillies have to say. So first, I want to say a big stars holla out to Haley. Haley Molotek, am I pronouncing that correctly?
I think so.
For writing a very flattering and lovely piece about Gilmore Girls and about our podcast in the New York Times, that's gotten us quite a bit more listeners. So thank you so much, Haley, for that. And then just New York has been such a great experience for both me and Demi, just doing the shows and coming here where it's like this isn't our home turf. It's a coast city, but still being able to do all three of these shows sold out and crowds have been so great. It's been so great to be able to connect with people afterwards and just like hang out and talk and chat about all things Gilmore. So thank you so much to everyone for making those happen. And before we go on, Alex, I have to ask you, Team Dean, Team Jess, or Team Logan?
I'm not team any of them.
Okay. See, that's where I am right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's ultimately the right answer. I just like saying Team Logan.
Dean is definitely the nicest, but he's also, like, in terms of personality, probably the worst.
Personality is lacking, yes.
Right. And as you guys have mentioned several times, his personality changes pretty dramatically from a guy who's once read a book to a guy who's never read a book.
Yep. That's true.
So I don't know. And Jess is the worst. I'm with you guys 100%.
That Jess is the worst. And I really do want to have an open heart about it and see, like, the appeal of it besides he's super attractive. but sometimes it's difficult, you know?
My wife loves Jess, just as
okay,
totally over the moon about him. You know, she's like, he had a troubled childhood.
Yeah, and that's what everyone says when this conversation comes up.
His mom is like a sweet, kind of doofy lady. I can imagine that made his life really, really hard.
I know. It's so interesting. What were you going to say, Demi?
I feel like a lot of people's opinions of Jess are colored by things that happen in the future. So for them to say, like, I can't believe you guys don't like Jess, at this point, I feel like it makes sense that we don't. But I'm sure in the future we might come around. I'm already starting to come around as of 421, but I'm not fully around to him being a great boyfriend, just that he's clearly trying to change as a person.
There's some effort there. There is a bit of an arc. As of season four, we discuss him 420, 421, that we find this Jess to be the most likable Jess so far.
That's true.
And maybe he even gets more likable in the future. Who knows? Who can say? But let's go ahead and dive into some voicemails. Now, truth be told, guys, I wanted the chance to listen to all these and label them and say, oh, we should play this, play that. And I had time to do that with a few of these, but for a lot of them, we're just going to listen to them. But here's one I did listen to before. That might be a fun topic of discussion for us.
Hey, guys. It's Paige Fernberg here. On the most recent episode that y'all did, y'all were talking about how you feel that a Gilmore Girls movie or possible season 8 probably wouldn't hold up or fulfill our little Gilly hopes and dreams. And that we probably just need more of Amy's voice in the TV world. So, if you had to pick your dream cast on Amy's new show, who would it be and what would it be about? Anything is possible. This can be like set in the future or back in time or whatever. It could have Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. It could have, you know, Babette and Miss Patty. Who is your dream? Let's hear it. Thanks. Bye.
So that's, of course, from Paige Fernberg, who's made so many great graphics for us and made us the buttons that we wore at our last show here at UCB, Team Emily and Team Paris. And that is something we talked about in as of recording this, the last episode we've released to the public about after the reunion and after the ATX stuff, like just the general sense that I don't know if we need season 8. I don't know if we need it. And the panel kind of turned me around on it in a little way. Alex, how do you feel about that whole idea? Do you think we need closure? Or do you think best let sleeping dogs lie?
I don't think that there's any way that a season 8 will satisfy anyone. There's never been a show that has any stakes that has come back from a long hiatus and been as good as people wanted it to be,
right.
I don't think. I mean, like, I'm excited for the Wet Hot American Summer show. But I feel like that show, there's zero stakes in that show.
That's such a good example. Even with Arrested Development, there became stakes, though. Don't you think?
I think there were, but I couldn't tell you what the stakes were having seen all of the episodes of the fourth season because I didn't care about them. It was fun to see them back, and it was funny enough, or at least I think so. A lot of people disagree, but I would never be like, season four was exactly what I wanted. It was just as good as the first three.
So. Right. I think it's really tough to pull off generally, and also because you're never going to get – I mean, you capture lightning in a bottle sometimes with the people who are actually working on the show. You know, it's not just the showrunner and the actors. There's, you know, a lot of people that go into creating a good show, and if you can't recapture that, it just feels off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because that was even my problem with Arrested. It wasn't even like – oh, they're not together. Because people said the macro stuff like, oh, they're not together in the same scene except for like one or two scenes. Or, oh, it's not blah, blah, blah. But to me, the problems with that show were on a very basic, I guess, kind of crew or technical level. Like, for example, they started using Steadicam shots, which the Russo brothers, who like totally set the visual language of the show, would never do. Like the whole doc aesthetic of it, it totally violates that. The editing was not good. Those original episodes were so tight and lean, and these were like real shaggy 42-minute episodes sometimes. So yeah, I mean, Alex brings up a good point because even though, oh, if Amy's back and Lauren's back, it'll be good, but maybe their editor was super good. Maybe, you know. If, you know, what if they didn't get back some like Mar and Jamie or Helen Pye and blah, blah, blah and whatnot. So, yeah, it'd be tough. But as far as like a dream cast goes, so let's say Amy's Amazon Prime pilot that she's writing right now gets picked up and that goes to series. Who would we like to see in it? Paladino alums, old and new.
Well, Paladino alums, honestly, I would anyone who's ever worked with Paladino. Sure. You know, obviously, I would love to see them come back. You know, Lauren Graham, Alexis Bledel, Kelly Bishop, obviously, the Dream Three. Anyone from Bunheads, even though I don't know too many of them. Sutton Foster, Stacey. The thing about doing a Dreamcast for a show that I don't know is that I would have to be like, who would work well with Amy's voice? And I don't know Amy's voice as well as Amy does. And I couldn't... One of the biggest draws for me in a show when I see it for the first time is that the cast is all people that I would never expect to be great, and then they kill it. So I don't know if I could cast a show based on the hypothesis that Amy is doing it. Although I would say, like, there are certain people who I've seen talk fast and could probably kill it, like Matthew Perry, I would probably love to see in a Paladino verse.
You know, as my first thought was Bradley Whitford. I was like, oh, Bradley Whitford would probably do very well in this world.
That's true.
You know?
Do you think that there should be like crossover fan fiction from the Sorkin verse?
I promise you, if you Google it, you will find it.
Is.
You will 100% find some.
Dule Hill walked into Miss Patty's and
Charlie. Oh man, yeah. You know, so Demi raises a good point that like so much of the appeal of these shows is discovering people, which I think is getting tougher now to cast that way. Mara and Jamie kind of shed some light on this, because as the prestige of TV has risen, the ability to cast a no name has gotten tougher. Like for instance, they wanted Broderick for Breaking Bad. They wanted Matthew Broderick as freaking Walter White.
What?
Have you heard that story?
No.
I have. Thing is, as much as we're like, what? It might have worked. We don't know.
Right.
If someone said Bryan Cranston to me, I'd be like, come
what?
On.
Yeah, exactly.
Malcolm so in the Middle guy?
Yeah.
Malcolm
Inspector
X.
Gadget. Come on.
Give me a break.
Go Gadget Meth.
Okay, so, Demi, do you remember...
I'll tell you right now, I probably don't.
Okay.
Continue.
Sorry. No, at our UCB show a couple days ago... I just briefly mentioned the Craigslist ad that someone, the misconnection at our Bell House show. That was super sweet. And we were not at all making fun of it. We were celebrating it. So then we got this voicemail.
Hey, so I was at your UCB show on Wednesday in New York. And, you mentioned something about a Craigslist misconnections ad. Well, I was in the audience and maybe I was the one who posted that ad, and maybe I should have said something. But I didn't, so I figured I'd call in and give a little backstory. So I went to your Monday show. I was wearing my I'd Rather Be Watching Gilmore Girls sweatshirt, as I'm known to do. And yeah, I met someone. She was all right. But I figured, well, you know, if I'm going to go to a show, if I'm going to meet someone, talk about Gilmore Girls, might as well try to make the Craigslist misconnection. Now, no. I have not received an email from this person, but that's okay. But I will have you know that anytime on Tinder I see that Gilmore guys, they shared interest, always swipe right on that. Has it worked out so far? No, it has not. I'm looking forward to making a connection through the Gilmore guys and listen to this email-y Gilmore guys show. So, good night.
See, this is why we got to do our relationship podcast and just set up.
This guy is awesome.
Each other.
I love this guy. I mean, that we are now a litmus test on Tinder is great news.
So, what was like the male to female makeup of your live shows?
I tell you what, and Kevin O'Keefe pointed this out too on Twitter. More men than you would think. And we did do a poll at the Bell House shows, at least one of them.
How do you account for that, do you think?
It's probably some boyfriends, right? Like you gotta factor in that. But I think generally, I think there's a lot of dudes like this guy who called in who are just unashamed about it and just unabashedly love the show.
If you guys end up finding out years later that years from now that your show led to some people getting married, will it feel like it had all been worth it?
Yes, absolutely. No, I said that at the show on Wednesday. I was like, if this leads to, because people say that about like Who Charted. I know there's a story like we met because of Who Charted, like we met at a live show or because of like the forums or something. And that's Kulop Vlasak and Howard Kramer's podcast on the Earwolf Network. And so those stories, even just the stories of like people talking in line and being cool with each other and like maybe making a friend. Like I love those stories.
Yeah, you don't have to get married. Just be friends.
Yeah, just be buddies. I mean, that's what being a ghillie is all about. Ghillie, which is now a word that has been printed in the New York Times.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's true. What have we done?
Who would have thought that that would end up there?
I would have. As soon as you started this podcast, you were like, what's the goal? And I was like, I want to get a weird word in the New York
Times. I want to get ghillie in the New York Times,
and you're
baby.
Like, okay, I just want to record this podcast. And I was like, no, I'm going for fame.
I'm just disappointed Ghillie Chucks didn't end up in there.
Yeah, what the hell?
Oh, I know. Patrick Walsh is going to be hella pissed about that.
It'll end up on a pillow.
Ghillie Chucks is probably the most pleasing assemblage of syllables I've ever heard in my life.
It's a really nice word. It almost feels like a restaurant that you go to with like your kids. Like, welcome to Ghillie Chucks. Hey.
Plate or platter.
You know how they say like cellar door is the most pleasing phrase in the English language?
Oh, Donnie Darko shit right there.
Yeah, it's definitely Ghillie Chucks.
It's actually Ghillie Chucks. I think that's 100% true. I think we may have another... Oh, this would be interesting. This might be a question for Demi.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Demi. This is Sarah from Fort Worth, Texas. I had so much fun at your first Austin show at the ATX Festival.
Yay.
Calling in with a question, I guess for both of you, if you had one storyline in the show that you could put in, what would it be? Like something that did not happen in the show that you wish had happened. Obviously, Demi doesn't know everything that happened so far, so Kevin's answer might be like the opposite of a spoiler, but anyway, anything that you guys think should have happened to any of the characters but didn't, at least not so far, I would love to hear it. Thanks. Bye.
A storyline we'd like to see happen that hasn't.
Well, I feel like I've mentioned a lot of times where I would love to see them shift focus from the main characters and just sort of follow townies just for a little bit. It doesn't have to be a full episode, but do a kind of... I'm trying to think of the analog because I know I've seen it in shows before, and I'm sure someone will point out that, like, oh, they followed non-main characters in this episode of this, and I would love to hear that. But
I mean, The Simpsons is pretty famous for
Simpsons
that.
Episode. Yeah, but I for some reason I'm thinking of a live action thing, although yeah. I might be thinking of nothing. Yeah, The Simpsons does it well, but I would love to see storylines in which we like follow Jess going back to New York for like half a day, or we follow Lane as she's working at the diner, or Lane as she's trying to set up the new apartment. I feel like a lot of times we sort of jump into situations with townies where we're just told, like, here, it's happening. It's a big deal, but it's happening. And I would love to just see it happen and see, like, I want some dimension to these. Although, I guess the draw of them is that they have no dimension. And by that, they're, like, wacky. But I would love to see dimension to some of the stories where it's, like, clearly a big deal for them. And to us, it's just background noise.
Well, I think it'd be funny. You mentioned, like, the idea of following Jess. I think it would be so interesting and funny if, like, you follow Jess and the style of the show totally changes. Like, instead of like the backlot, it's like gritty location shooting.
Yeah.
It's all handheld stuff. It looks like the David Fincher shot. Well, it wouldn't be if it was handheld, but it looks like a gritty, like a Soderbergh shot it or something. And it looks like super high production. But then when he goes to Stars Hollow, it just morphs into a steady cam and a wide shot and super bright lighting. That would be kind of like an auteur situation. Like, think about that. If, like, every time you followed a townie, it turned to a totally different genre of show in look and tone and feel. You follow Miss Patty, and it kind of turns into Smash.
Like a Stars Hollow anthology.
Yeah, exactly.
I would like for a Kirk episode, which looks like Kirk's short film.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I feel like his life is that short film.
And it's like him running to new jobs every 15 minutes. Like, oh, I'm at the counter now. Oh, I've got to go sell puppies or whatever.
Every time the scene changes, it's just him at the next job.
Right.
I got to go host a podcast.
What would a Kirk's podcast be?
I don't know.
Cat Talk with Kirk.
Cat Talk.
I feel like it would be about the town. It would be like a local podcast, and part gossip, like part rant. Him complaining about not getting his due, and him talking a lot about what Miss Patty's up to.
He would be the Sean Hannity of Stars Hollow.
Yeah, I was going to say he would be Sam Jackson and Do the Right Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just like in the window, just being, good morning, Stars Hollow. And every morning, like, Miss Patty knocks on the window, just be like, knock it off, Kirk.
here is an interesting voicemail from literally 3 months ago that we just haven't played yet.
Hey, Kevin and Demi, this is Caitlin calling from New Jersey, and I have
She's
a little
close.
Information I thought you might be interested in. So during a semester of college I spent in Amsterdam, I took Dutch classes, and I thought you might be interested to know that in Dutch, the O-O combination actually is pronounced O instead of O, like it's pronounced in English. So
which means?
I'm thinking that that might be where the dozy pronunciation comes from. And it turned out I looked up the name on ancestry.com, and it is of Dutch origin, and there are several Dosi families that exist in the United States. And maybe the Paladinos ran into them at some point in life. So that's a little Dutch lesson for you.
She did the work.
That solved a little bit of a mystery surrounding the Dosi family origin. Thanks a lot, guys. Love the show. Love you guys. Bye.
Oh, my gosh. She did the work.
I don't buy it.
What?
Nope. No, I'm kidding. That's very interesting. Thank you for pointing that out. However, in my head, I'm still like,
Dosi.
Did you guys get a chance at ATX to ask Amy about Taylor Dosi's last name? And if not, why wasn't that your first priority?
We didn't get a chance to ask her about anything.
Oh, yeah, you didn't. You kind of talked to her.
Not really. She talked to me. She said one sentence to me, and that's the entire exchange.
Oh, okay.
What was it?
Yeah, I know, you guys.
That's true. Yeah. That's actually...
Because Kevin had already met her, and then when I met her, someone reintroduced us, and she's like, yeah, I know, you guys.
Oh, that's... I mean, that's flattering.
She's
right?
A friend of the
are.
Show. Yeah, I mean, well, it might be.
I'm getting those six words tattooed on my abdomen.
But let's also know thy enemy, maybe.
I think it's more that you're not an enemy of the show.
Yeah.
To call her a friend of the show.
I mean, no, I do. And I'm hopeful that we will. They do like us. I want to be very clear. Her and Daniel are Team Gilmore guys. And I think they'll defend it to the death on their social, on their many social media accounts.
Yeah. On her,
their very high public profile.
Yeah. I mean, they do kind of live. I mean, it is funny. They live the life of like hermits. Anyway, Hermits the Frog. Let's. Ooh, this might be fun. Let's play a voicemail that I haven't screened and see where it leads us.
Oh, great.
Nope, that one's 2.5 minutes. Here we go. This is a more palatable length.
Hi, Kevin and Demi. This is Leland. Just wanted to say a big fan of the show. Went to all three of your New York shows and going to the Philadelphia one. Very excited for that. And the shows were fantastic. I just had a question. It doesn't need to be put on the air or anything, but
well.
I'm wondering if you guys are going to release an MP3 of your rendition of Reflecting Light, because I'm sure I'm not the only one. We all loved it so much and thought it was so sweet. So charming. So just wanted to say that loved the shows. Do the highlight of my Mondays and Wednesdays, and hopefully I'll be able to hear Reflecting Light again. Okay.
Oh, that's so nice. So she's, of course, talking about the end of our first... Let's listen to it again. More compliments. At the end of our second Bell House show, we've closed it with a rough acoustic version of Reflecting Light on harmonica, ukulele, and...
Who was playing what?
Oh, he was playing it all.
No, you were playing the tambourine app.
I was playing
app.
The digital tambourine, yeah.
The tambourine app
the
on
the tambourine.
I don't know. I mean, one thing we probably won't release it as an MP3. Maybe we'll put like a video. I don't know. I don't know if it's good enough to release, though, truthfully. She might be remembering it. I mean, it's so nice and sweet she said so, but like she might be remembering it better than it was. I don't know.
I didn't think it was awful, but I also didn't think...
It wasn't awful, but it wasn't like...
It was like earth-shattering.
Our single just dropped. But... Yeah, what I do want to do when we have the time is to cut all the videos together of, like, the songs that we've done. Like the ATX song. The ATX. Let's see. Let's take a listen to another... Maybe we'll do one more voicemail.
I thought your guys' rap on the first live episode was incredible.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. That was really heavy. It throws into sharp relief your regular improvised raps.
Which we haven't done in a while.
Probably for the best.
Are you kidding? I love those. I really wanted to do one for a live episode where we like get audience names ahead of time and then just like pull them out of a hat. But that might be a mess.
They're very entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a fun mess. Maybe for like a, you know what, when we have time to do that, maybe we'll do that.
Especially the episode where you decided that you couldn't use the same rhymes you were normally using.
Thank you to you for your review.
Seven, heaven is Kevin.
Kevin, oh gosh, our hack rhymes. Okay, one more voicemail, and again, I've not screened this one, so we'll just see what it is.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Demi.
Everyone's so nice.
I'm listening from Chicago, and I just wanted to call to see about your live shows. I had a question for you about them. So I know that you're doing a ton of live shows now, and I see you on Twitter all the time, going to Philly and D.C., and that's all nice for all those East Coast people.
Uh-oh.
You do shows on the West Coast, and that's nice for them, but Chicago, Illinois is a wonderful city, especially in the summer when it's not a frozen tundra here, I promise. There's a beach here, promise that too. And I was wondering if ever, by chance, you could come to Chicago, because I'm kind of broke, and I can't come all the way to Philly or D.C. or New York or L.A. to see one of your live shows. Oops. I wish I could, but, you know, I lack funds and time off work. So please, please, please come to Chicago. There are a lot of Midwest gillies out here, gillies for several years, like me, who would love to see you guys. And, yeah, that's all I have, and hope you guys are having a good day. I don't know. What am I saying right now? Okay, I need to just shut up and hang up the phone.
It goes for two
bye,
more minutes.
Kevin,
I'm just kidding. I think we should plan a live show in Chicago on literally the coldest night of the year.
One of my thinking, or one of the thing I've been thinking a lot is, I can't wait until we do a show in a cold climate so I can finally wear that Gilmore Girls jacket that Mara and Casey so
that's
lovingly gave
right.
to us.
Yes, yes, yeah. yes. Do you have that?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
For Mara and Jamie. I said Mara and Casey.
Mara and Casey. You know, classic Mara and Casey duo. I mean, I hope we go to Chicago. It all just depends on scheduling and stuff that's sort of in our hands, sort of out of our hands.
Believe us, we want to go as many places as we can. It's hard to do, hard to schedule, and hard, like, we don't have that many episodes left. So you'll know as soon as we know. We're not hiding any secret plans from you guys.
Right.
So.
Yeah, how many episodes do you guys have left?
Of the show, counting 422, 67.
Mm.
Not a big number.
Yeah.
And with, like, I feel like, especially for season 5, like, guest spots are getting limited, too. So, like, we might have to do a thing where we, like, combine guests. Because think about it, you have 22 episodes in a season, and then say even 5 of those are live. So then you're stuck, you know, you're with 17 episodes in studio, 5 of them live. Which I hope we do more than 5 live for season 5. Yeah, it's getting tough as we wind things down. We're on the down slope. Is that the right term? Down slope?
I mean, I might suggest that these episodes are going to be worse, but...
No, they will be worse.
We're on
right?
the down wind, for sure.
The down... Yeah, we're on the down wind, bro.
The downward spiral.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
This is now a Nine Inch Nails podcast.
The downward spiral. Let's actually go ahead and read some of those sweet-ass emails. Let's take a look. Let's take a look. It's in a book, A Reading Rainbow. James Murray Jr. asked, just got caught up with your show, so I can finally ask a question. As Paris and Roy are running from the rain, in from the rain in 417, Paris yells, no, it's National Baptism Day. Tie your tubes, idiot.
The
which is
line.
One of the greatest
amazing.
Lines of all time in the show. Is the girl who asks, is it raining, Rose Leslie from Game of Thrones?
I don't know who that is.
Me either.
Rose Leslie?
Let's look that up.
Maybe I should have done my research before reading that question aloud.
Would you guys like me to sing hold music while you're...
yeah, dude. Some Gilmore Girls style hold music.
La, la, la.
Yeah.
La, 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 la.
La, 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 la.
So I was in a band until pretty recently. My band just broke up, and I realized...
Is that true? What did you play?
I play guitar.
Oh, hell yeah.
Thank you.
It wasn't her, but I do want to hear the story.
But we had a song, and I realized well after we started playing that live that I had stolen the melody from that music cue.
Oh, no way.
Just totally stolen. It is the exact same melody.
That's so funny. No. I mean, but you know what? That's so much in music. So you're just continuing the tradition of everyone ripping everyone else off.
Right.
That's how music genres are created.
All right. If you guys are cool with it, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I think we're cool with it.
Plagiarize away.
That's so funny that you stole it for that one in particular.
So I was listening. We've been a band. We were together for like 3 or 4 years. We played a couple shows, probably under 20. And then, you know, Gilmore Girls came back out on DVD and I was watching it and I was like, oh. Oh man, this song sounds so familiar. And then I was like, oh, it's because it's a song that I wrote, quote unquote. Yeah, I just ripped that. It's the exact same melody. Exact same melody.
That's amazing. On the subject of music cues, Elise writes in, just a short story on how your podcast impacted my life. While I was watching an episode, I was in my room, sort of watching in the background. There's a scene involving a medium-level emotional exchange between Lorelai and someone else. Anyway, the Lala's music cue kicked in, and I was singing along. Only instead of continuing with Lala's on the second go, I sang Special Guest instead, using Kevin's preferred part of the harmony. You are fundamentally changing the way I watch the show, gentlemen. Keep up the good work. This is from Elise, who came to the New York shows with her sister and roommate from Canada.
Yeah.
It's that Elise.
I remember
her roommates from Canada, or she came from Canada?
All three of them are from Canada.
I remember there was a group of three people lobbying for us to do a show in Canada, and they were saying that they would gladly put up flyers with the photo that we had taken to prove that the Gilmore guys were not enemies of the state. So, if anyone can talk to the Canadian Prime Minister, let them know that we're not enemies of the state.
Why do we need that proof?
No, I just want the Canadian Prime Minister to know. We don't need the proof. I just want him to be aware.
Just so we're on the same page.
Yeah.
More to the subject of this show. So, Anna writes in, I've always thought that the decision that the Paladinos made to make Lorelai an only child was interesting. Richard and Emily seem to be in a class of people that would want the Gilmore name to be carried on, and they're obviously wealthy enough to have multiple children. Additionally, if Lorelai had a sibling close in age who had done everything right in the eyes of Emily and Richard, it would serve as another tool that Emily could use to belittle Lorelai's life choices. Just saying. Dot, dot, dot. Ideas for actors that could play this pretend sibling? I do think that's an interesting idea.
Callista Flockhart. Now I'm just thinking of Brothers and Sisters.
Yeah, you're just Sally Field.
Yeah.
For Lorelai's sister.
That is a decent point. But like, if Lorelai was as strong-willed from the get-go as she became in her high school years, we don't know much about her early childhood, other than she doesn't remember it.
And she has a big head.
Right.
And she grew into it.
maybe that scared them off of having other kids.
Yeah, well, that was my thought. It's like once their 16-year-old gets pregnant and runs away, maybe they were so traumatized by that experience that they were like, oh, well, let's not do that again.
But you generally don't wait 16 years between siblings. Like, generally, you have them a couple years apart.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Well, then I don't know. Maybe Richard, you know, couldn't.
You know. Or wouldn't. Got his tubes tied.
Yeah, maybe Richard got his tubes tied.
Honestly, maybe they had one child and they were like, this is kind of a hassle. We'll stick with this one. Some people just want one, you know, child.
Carrying on the Gilmore name, though, does seem like something Richard and Emily would be into.
Do you have siblings, Alex?
I do have an older brother and a younger sister.
I have an older brother and older sister. You have a...
Younger sister.
Younger sister. So we're all not only children. I think Amy might be an only child. Maybe that's where it comes from.
Maybe.
I think she actually is an only child.
It is true, though, that like you get compared to your siblings quite a bit when you come in.
Well, I mean, for me, it's kind of a blessing because my brother is like an extraordinary person, as is my sister. But I feel like they have kind of taken not the brunt, but they fulfilled my parents' expectations. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. My brother has the beautiful wife and the children that... And he does foster care and he has the dream job and he's close to home. So he's fulfilled all that so I don't have to. I can do a dumb podcast. but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't feel the pressure. Like, I got to find a wife and impregnate her so they'll have grandchildren. They got grandchildren. They don't care. They'll be fine if I die alone and single and penniless.
You were the backup plan. And now that the plan has been fulfilled, you're free to do what you want.
That's right. you know?
That's not true.
I'm not free to do what I want.
No, you are not the backup plan. In the terms of casting, in my head, I'm seeing Fairuza Balk. Or Balk?
Balk.
Balk.
What about
Fairuza Balk?
What about for a dude?
For a dude.
For a Gilmore Boy.
Whit Herford.
Whit Herford?
He was the...
Who's that?
It sounds like you were trying to say another name.
It's not Bradley Whitford. I think it was Whit Herford. He was the guy that played the kid in Jurassic Park. He was like Glenn in Jurassic Park. I don't know.
So he would have been 15 years younger than Lauren Graham.
15?
Yeah.
Mm.
Right? No.
I don't think so. Jurassic Park was like the 80s.
No, it's 93.
93, bro.
Oh, no. What am I thinking of?
What? Wait, did you think Jurassic Park came out in the 80s?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
Let me ask you a question. When did you think Terminator 2 came out?
1920?
No, boy. Oh, boy.
This is Whit Herford.
Oh, I think that's the kid from Jurassic Park.
It definitely is.
Okay.
Anyway.
It's not the kid. It's not the main kid. It's
no,
the
no,
kid
no.
at the very beginning who he threatens with the claw.
Yes.
Oh, that everyone thought was like, what if that's Chris Pratt now?
Which I hate that theory, but yeah, that kid.
Yeah, and that movie. Blah.
Yeah.
I know. We have differing opinions on that. So Lydia wrote in, and she gave us some suggestions for, because as we just discussed, we have 67 episodes left. So she gave us some suggestions for the Gilmore Guys movie club that we were toying with doing. And she said, the horror movie House of Wax, starring Jared Padalecki and Chad Michael Murray.
I've actually seen that movie already.
Well, we can watch it again.
Right, right, yeah.
Also,
Paris Hilton.
Yeah, she says Paris, .. Hilton. an actually good movie, she suggests, is Noah Baumbach's Kicking and Screaming, starring Chris Eggman.
It's a great movie.
It's a group about a group of witty, fast-talking guys right after college graduation. One of my favorite lines from a young digger is, I'm nostalgic for conversations I had yesterday. I've begun reminiscing events before they even occur. I'm reminiscing this right now. I can't go to the bar because I've already looked back on it in my memory, and I didn't have a good time.
Mm.
It sold me in the movie.
Yeah.
It's like the first Noah Baumbach, or it's very early. It's really good, though.
He did Running with Scissors after that, right? Was that him?
Yeah.
He did the Squid and the Whale.
Oh, Running with Scissors, the...
Wait, Squid and the Whale was Baumbach?
Yeah.
It was Noah Baumbach. He did that movie Greenberg.
Yeah, it came out in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Greenberg.
And
some other
Frances
stuff.
Ha?
Yeah, Frances Ha and While We're Young.
Is that her name? I haven't seen the movie. Or is it just like
either.
A name and then
name
a laugh?
I think her name is Frances, and then I don't know. I started watching it, and I was like, I don't think I like this, so I stopped.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
That's a good... You know, when you're an adult, that's a good rule.
But I use that rule way too often. It sucks, because I end up watching shitty movies just because I don't have time to wait until good movies get good.
Right. Hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
You know what's funny is the AV Club had an article this morning about what are the same name pop culture things that you hate, like Kicking and Screaming and then the Will Ferrell Kicking and Screaming. And I've seen the Will Ferrell Kicking and Screaming, not the Noah Baumbach one, because it's very easy to get into and be like, this is dumb immediately, and then just keep watching his background noise.
What a strange philosophy.
It's just easier to watch bad movies. That's why I do it all the time.
Is it easier to watch a bad movie
so
than a good
much
movie?
Easier.
Really?
Yes.
Because you don't have to concentrate on it.
You don't have to take it in.
Okay,
as
yeah,
anything.
I see that. I actually understand that perspective.
No one's going to ask you to analyze a bad movie. You can just go, it wasn't good, and then the conversation is done. You go, it was good. People go, tell me what was great about it.
Yeah, oh, just like Sean was talking about.
Yeah.
This is from Brendan. He says, hi, Gilmore Guys. My wife, and he told us to read it in the Borat voice,
nice.
And I have different reads of the sprinkler scene in episode 305. Do you guys remember this? Jess comes over, and then he helps Rory turn off the sprinkler after she runs to him like a weird Muppet girl. And then he turns off the sprinkler, and then she says, Dean's coming over, and then he turns it back on. Brennan writes, she agrees with the listener you mentioned who said that this is the scene that will make you love Jess if you didn't already. And Brendan says, I think it shows what a piece of shit he is. The issue is this. When Jess turned the sprinklers back on, it looked to me like an act of passive aggression, whereas my wife thinks it was so that Dean could come and save the day, making it a compassionate act. What do you guys think? Brendan, P.S., a good name for a wealthy friend of Emily's is Titty de la Croix.
Yep. Titty of the sparkling waters. I don't remember Jess turning the water back on.
You don't?
No.
It happened.
I'm sure it did, but I'm just in my head. I just remember Jess running and turning off the water and looking at her silently. And then,
right, I'm gonna have to go with Brendan's wife on this because I do think it was supposed to be like, see, he cares about her, and he's leaving it on for Dean, which is a pretty cool act.
That was my read.
Yeah. So, asked and answered, Brendan. You're wrong. Just kidding. This is from Nicole. I'm almost caught up. I had a quick question, a quick comment on the episode with DC Pearson. So she's referring to episode 222 and how he said that sometimes people shouldn't date solely based on shared interests. I think that this is something that comes with age. When people are 16 or 17, their whole identity is based on what they're into. So this is what they can discuss with others and forms a basis for a relationship. The majority of people in that age group, but not all, aren't at a level where they can have deeper conversations. When you're young, you talk about people and things, whereas once you've matured, you can discuss more about ideas. To quote Eleanor Roosevelt, although this could be wrongly credited, it is the internet after all, great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people. I'm not sure that teenagers have enough life experience to fully appreciate the nuances of a heavy debate without taking things as a personal attack on their interests and views. Feel free to share this with DC. I love that he decided to watch the whole series so he could understand the episode. Clearly, he has a great mind. Keep up the good work, Nicole.
This is the same sentiment that Mara Wilson shared on Twitter with our show and with DC, saying that, like, isn't that kind of the point? And it is the point, you know? They're just teenagers, but I think as adults commenting on the behaviors of teenagers, we can say they might look like they go great together, but we know that that can't last. So.
And sometimes I find myself falling into that same trap, too, right. A little bit. I feel like even in the last, 2 years, I've gotten better about, you don't like this thing I like. Ew, you're less valuable as a person. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't watch Breaking. It doesn't matter at all.
I weirdly found myself in a thing where if I realize that someone is almost the complete opposite of me, taste-wise, sometimes that's when I'm that's kind of intriguing, and I feel like I fit more like a puzzle piece with that. And that's also a bad way to do it. There's no formula for this.
It's not a bad way to do it. It's just another way to do it. I don't think it's bad.
I don't think either of them is a good way to be we like the same things, or we like different things.
Oh, to base it on that,
yeah.
Sure.
I think there's no formula for that kind of thing. It's like,
I mean, Alex, how much taste do you share with your wife in that sense?
I can tell you guys, as a married man, I share almost no similar tastes with my wife. None. And
even with this show?
This is some rare overlap.
Okay.
But I like sci-fi and horror a lot. She's not into sci-fi and horror at all. Actually, it takes a pretty strong stance against it. She's just really not interested. I am a big music collector. She likes, 10, 15 bands. It doesn't matter. As long as you like each other's company, as long as you make each other laugh.
Right.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, I think taste only becomes important when it comes to maybe what makes you laugh. And not even the comedies you're watching on TV or something, but being able to have the same taste and you think I'm funny, I think you're funny.
But Nicole's totally on point with this. I used to be a real awful hipster nerd guy. I worked at a video store, a cult video store.
You were Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I mean, worse probably.
Oh, gosh.
And then after that, I went and worked at a record store. So I had all of the sort of cultural bona fides of a real obnoxious, snobby person. And I realized that basing my romantic tastes on my cultural taste was just... It was fruitless. It did not work. I never found someone that I was genuinely interested in that way. It was always people who actually could bring me into a world that I didn't quite know, or lived a life that was independent of all this dumb crap I was really into. That where I was oh yeah, I actually understand. I'm actually interested. Because
right.
If it's just you recitating, did you see this, Peruvian art film, it's not very compelling. It's not interesting. You don't learn anything from them.
Right.
So you feel like you're learning from your wife every new day.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what marriage is all about, guys.
She made me watch all of Sex and the City.
And you did?
I did.
When you did it, were you kind of snarky during it, or did you just Shut your mouth.
It's weird. You guys make a lot of mention of the sort of very unlikable characteristics of the Gilmore Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, like, I didn't – on my first watch, I didn't really get. But now that I'm watching it again as an older person, like, yeah, they're very unlikable in some ways. And in some ways, you can really identify with them. I feel like the Sex and the City – for me, Sex and the City is just stocked top to bottom with people that I hate. Just hate. I just hate them all for their own unique reasons. So like I really didn't enjoy them, but I still got caught up in the drama of it. I still was, you know, there were still – I still
the
feel –
The drama.
Like,
Mr. Big, Mr. Small.
I still feel like, you know, Carrie screwed Aiden and Berger was the perfect guy for her. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Big was kind of a sleazeball and I was really happy that Miranda ended up with Steve. Like, you know, I still got caught up in the drama of it, even though I didn't really like anybody.
And it's interesting about the point of Gilmore Girls because, like, I think on Sex and the City, those shows are pretty blatantly unlikable, as I find a lot of characters on cable to be, which I guess is probably the point. But with Gilmore, it's kind of a slow burn because, I mean, I love Lorelai and Rory, but it's just if you apply even a cursory analysis of their behavior, it's like, uh-oh. But they are so charming and they're such good characters that on a surface level, it's just like it's profoundly, I'm 100% charmed by Lorelai in almost everything she
right.
does.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's what the nuance of it makes it interesting.
Well, the thing that you guys have done with this show, which I totally have never done before watching the Gilmore Girls, and I watched it when it was on the air the last couple seasons, and then I watched it again on Netflix DVD as soon as we got Netflix in like 2006 or something, and then I've started watching it again, is I never thought to myself, if we were using real world logic and Lorelai behaved the way that she behaves to Luke, to me, how would I react? Because I was just like, oh, she's so charming. She's so quirky. And then when you guys sort of broke it down, I was like, oh, I would be furious. I don't think I would ever talk to her.
Yeah, well, you know, but relationships like that do exist too.
Right.
Like this must be, there are relationships that probably very closely model Luke and Lorelai's relationship, whether it's the guy to the girl to the guy, whatever. So there has to be, I mean, I'd be interested if any of our listeners feel like they're within a relationship like that on either end of that. I mean, not that Luke is perfect, but he's pretty great. Someone had a very long defense of Jess that I think is interesting. I can't read it all, though, because it's so long. But
what's
this
the gist of it?
What's the gist of it?
Yeah.
Arthur says, he's been catching up and he wants to defend Jess. There's two things that need to be established first, though. Is Gilmore Girls underwrites its male characters and Jess is written to be the male version of Lorelai?
No. Mm.
Okay, here's his defense of that. Think about it. Lorelai was rebellious against her parents. She got in trouble. She went against the path that was chosen for her. She always believed she was right. She was way smarter than everyone around thought she was. She yearned for independence. She's self-righteous to a fault, and she never had any friends. Even in her adult life, Lorelai's best friend is Rory, mostly because of the similarities to herself. She gets along with Suki, but to say they're best friends, I think, is a stretch. I think they're best friends.
They are best friends. Yeah. And also, this seems like a checklist, not in... like in history, not in execution of these
characters. Sure. Oh, that's an interesting point. Lorelai has found herself. She's embraced her quirks. She's found a reason to live. Rory, and she's found the joy in her life. So we like her. But as a teenager, a listener even pointed out a dozen episodes ago that Lorelai could arguably be seen as a bratty kid, even as an adult. Imagine her as a teenager with her teen angst and self-righteous attitude. She'd be a complete snob and supremely unlikable. Sound like someone you know? Just as Lorelai. I don't know.
Just comparing how two characters are unlikable in certain ways doesn't make them the same. The difference between Jess and Lorelai is that Jess has not done anything for anyone else thus far in the show, save for maybe two things that I'm sure I'm forgetting right now and listeners will point out.
Right.
But Lorelai, Lorelai as the main character is built to do things a lot of times that are seen as beneficial and to have like actual backstory, whereas Jess is... he's a volley up for stories with Rory. So I don't think... comparing them is really, they're not the same at all.
You know, the difference, I think, is that Jess is unable to acknowledge when he's hurt someone.
Yeah.
When he hurts someone, he's just like, well, whatever.
Do you Yahoo?
But Lorelai actually, attempts to understand what she's done. Even if in the end she's pigheaded and doesn't
right. And I believe in Lorelai's sincerity when she does have those moments where it's like, oh, I screwed up. Oh, I'm sorry, kid. Blah, 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 blah. Or whoever she's talking to. Or like even with Emily, like, mom, that sucks. I'm sorry. You know, there is some humility there. Whereas I don't know if – has Jess up to this point, and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure I am. Has he said, I'm really sorry? Until 421, that scene with Luke where he's like, I want to pay you back for everything. Has he ever said to any character, I'm sorry? Even just, I'm sorry, even in a cursory way.
Not to my knowledge, but...
He really, like, when he wouldn't go to his mom and TJ's wedding, I was really like, you're just awful. Come on.
Yeah.
How long are you going to keep this up?
But then he did, and then he was a good boy. He was a good boy for mommy.
Creepy.
Which is a phrase everyone loves in our listenership. Okay, so the next paragraph in this is, which brings me to the tragedy that is Jess's story. The difference between Jess and Lorelai is he lacks a support system and a closeness with his family. Lorelai may have all these traits that made her a nightmare to get along with, but Richard and Emily never gave up on her. Say what you will about their insistence to force a way of life onto her. They never gave up. Jess's family gave up on him. His father left and his mother sent him away. Never mind Lorelai leaving her parents because she couldn't handle it. Jess's parents sent him away.
Is that their defense of why he's mean?
There's like four more paragraphs. I mean, because I don't want to give this argument the short shift, but while we're on the topic, I want to mention that the reason Jess doesn't talk about his problems is because his family taught him that when he has problems, they will send him away. His father left simply because he existed. His mother sent him away because he had problems. He hides problems from Rory because he doesn't want to be perceived as having issues because he's afraid that she'll get rid of him. He's adopted this attitude of everything is fine, I can do it on my own because he has to. That's an interesting point.
I feel like there's a lot of armchair psychology in defense of Jess, and I want to say that, like, as much as that could be valid, having it not be there is really hard to argue, because all of our points saying why we don't like Jess is like, here's what he's done, I don't like that, and a lot of people are saying he did this because of this, which is not explored, and I'm just like, come on.
Interesting. Like, it is an interesting way to read TV shows and movies, because it's like, it is analysis being applied to make things better.
And
which is what we do on the show constantly.
Right.
We apply analysis to everything. That's why I make Emily the great. Like, if we just took Emily at face value, is she a monster?
I mean, even at face value, she's not a monster,
right.
I think. And Jess is not a monster either. It's just he has like a history of doing things that I can't really get on board with and don't seem very... whatever the opposite of detrimental is, beneficial. That's
beneficial.
A good word.
Yes.
Beneficial to his relationship with necessarily anybody. So I don't like looking at it from a psychological standpoint of like, well, he's this way because of his past, or he's this way because his parents sent him away. Because that's not it's like backstory that isn't applied to anything else.
I think that he's right though that that Jess is a little underwritten, and the reason that we sort of apply motive to Emily, even if she's not saying it explicitly, it's because the writers are really deft at telegraphing her motives in a way that...
Emily?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way that they're not necessarily with Jess. Jess is a series of actions that we have no choice but to try and impute motive on. And if you take those actions at face value, he's a real jerk. And with Emily, a lot of her actions, she's a real jerk. But we get a lot more of her psyche... In the writing and in the sort of way that the scenes are staged.
Plus, they make Emily a sympathetic character a lot of times.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they give her a lot of leeway, like in a lot of health and relationship with like Richard. Well, previously.
She shows a lot of, there are a lot of moments where she's not, where she, her like facade sort of washes away.
Mm-hmm.
And she becomes this character where you're like, oh, I understand all the hurt and all the defensiveness and all the armor she's got
right.
on.
Jess doesn't have those.
Those moments?
No.
Where you kind of see the facade drop a little bit?
No. Even in moments where you think he would be down are just played for comedy, as if you're supposed to
like
not
when?
Be on his side. Like when his car gets egged.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's strange that they wouldn't make that a... That's an interesting
Although
point.
I guess that was something done by the main character, so you can't be like, oh, I feel bad for Jess, because then you're going to go, oh, I hate these girls.
Well,
so maybe that's not a great example.
And then concluding, he's never been someone... He's never been given someone to talk to. He's never been given a relationship like what Lorelai and Rory have. He's never even been given a support system like Richard and Emily have. He was offered something similar by Luke, but he knows Luke isn't his actual family. And he doesn't trust he'll stick it out for him. So he risks it on his father, hoping that he can form a bond with his dad the way Rory formed a bond with her mom, but he likely won't succeed. Jess's story is what happens to a kid when he's neglected, when he has shitty parents who don't give an F about what happens to him. It's easy to blame the child and say, well, he's such an a-hole. Look at the way he acts. But he's got that way for a reason. Rory sees that he's smart, he's funny, and he has the Is he funny? Is he funny, guys?
I mean, to Rory, maybe. That's to be seen.
What are some jokes that he's told?
Rory, I love you. That was a hilarious one.
What a joke that was. What are some jokes he's told?
He did magic tricks. He said, nice spin, you should work for Bush.
That was a sick joke.
He said, in cones. He said some jokes. They're not funny to us, but that doesn't make them not jokes.
He has said some jokes. Yeah, when he's like flirting with Rory. But he's got the way for a reason. He has the capability. Here it is. He has the capability of being someone good. It's in his genes. He's related to Luke, after all. But at this point in his life, he's too damaged. Jess's story could have happened to Lorelai if things had been a little different. But if she didn't have a reason to be successful, or if her parents didn't support her, I can understand why you guys didn't like Jess throughout the show, but I think the only appropriate feeling for the character is pity. Arthur.
I'm just going to leave it at I disagree. I don't pity him at all.
I pity him a little bit. I pity the fool that is.
Oh,
Jess.
Man.
Sorry. I just realized how, like, vociferously I was saying pity. I pity. But I do. I mean, just like, no, having parents that, like, ship you out is a bummer. I don't pity him to the extent that it is a pardon for his sins and egregiousness. Mm. Not to that extent, but yeah, I have compassion and sympathy for him because, yeah, he didn't have a support system because Lorelai did have the town of Stars Hollow to help raise Rory, if that's the comparison we're going with. So, you know, there's some valid points in there, but I just wanted to represent that perspective on the show as we want to include all perspectives on the show. Maybe let's close it out with a voicemail I haven't screened. I'm sure it'll go wonderfully. Here we go.
Hi, this is Jacqueline from St. Louis, Missouri. I was calling about episode 316, Dear Emily and Richard. I just listened to your podcast a little while ago, and I just wanted to know what your guys' thoughts about Lorelai was in the sense of her leaving. I remember you guys had, like, some mixed feelings about it, but I just wanted to, like, point out, like, she had been living in that house for, like, a year and constantly having Emily's nagging presence around about how, oh, you've thrown your life away. You should be with Christopher, particularly in that first year when you have a crying baby. Well, like, good stuff. I hear that's hard, parenting in general, so just wondering if now that there's been so much time between you guys watching that episode, if you've reevaluated your opinions on that. Anyway, thank you so much for all the fun Gilly chucks on my drive to work.
There it is.
Great. My friend Delia and I love to listen to your show. It makes us super happy inside. So keep it up and, you know, come to St. Louis in your spare time. I will make you brownies. Have a great day. Bye.
Brownies? Demi, we got to go to St. Louis.
I'm booking a plane.
She's asking
I do want some brownies, though. Oh, just about if our perspective has evolved on the character of on Lorelai leaving and that being kind of a jerk move at the end of Dear Emily and Richard, which is the flashback episode where we see young Chris and young Lorelai dealing with the pregnancy. I think I still stand by that, like, I'll stick it out a little bit. Or just the manner which you did it was cold. It was a note.
I don't even remember what I said back then, but I will say that I think for any child to leave at a super young age, I'm just kind of like, maybe stick it out for a bit. And I think that leaving with a note, super cold, I think that just kind of uprooting, it turned out well for her, but I'm curious as to how it would have been if she had stuck it out. But I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't remember how I felt about that. But I want to say
Shaq-ho.
I did feel very Shaq-ho about it.
Shaq-ho. You know, I felt pretty Shaq-Who about it too.
Yeah.
On that subject, what do you think are some of our opinions that have, and we'll kind of close out with this, like some opinions that have evolved from the start of the show into now? I mean, your macro opinion of the show, I think, has evolved into like thinking it's wonderful and great, whereas on season one, it was still in the course of winning you over.
Right.
But even in like, and for you as well, Alex, in watching the show or revisiting it or even thinking about it more and talking about it, like, what do you think is an opinion you have that then kind of changed and evolved the more you thought about or gave an analysis?
Ooh, that's tough. Well, like I said earlier, like I have a much more critical eye of on Lorelai and Rory.
Sure.
You know, I have to say that I like Madeline and Louise this time around a lot more than I did last time. They're sort of like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Totally. Yep.
They like
yes.
show up and comment and.
I made that comment on an episode with Sarah Copeland recently. That's exactly who they are.
So you remember how I plagiarized that music cue? I also plagiarized your thoughts.
Wow.
I'll just say them again.
Alex Goldman is the new Shia LaBeouf, baby.
I thought that they were kind of annoying, especially Louise for some reason really drove me nuts the first time I watched it. I really like them this time around.
I like them now too.
Yeah, they're fun.
I'm trying to think of characters I like now, like doing this podcast that I did not when I first watched it, like as a teenager. And who that would be.
Oh, and you know what else? I think that they're too mean to Kirk. That is a new opinion. At first, I was like, oh, comic relief. But now it's just like...
Yeah, we do examine the cruelty of, like, they just beat up on him all the time.
It's too much.
Yeah.
I think sometimes if I think too much about the fact that... Like, if you see all these events back to back to back, you're like, oh, wow, ease up on Kirk. But when you realize that he's not reacting to them, it's almost... I don't know if it's sadder that he's not reacting, being like, hey, can you... Like, you're being real mean to me. Or if it's sadder that he... like that he has no reaction at all.
Well, that's what the spinoff would be. You follow Kirk home and it's like one of his short films and it's him weeping in his bedroom while his mom is screaming downstairs with a cat for 10 minutes and he's just crying like, why does everyone hate me?
You gotta leave this town. If I didn't have to take care of you, I'd leave this town.
Oh my God.
It's so dark.
That is dark. It's like a David Lynch
mac
movie.
And cheese.
All right, well, let's wrap it up, guys.
Okay.
Alex, let's do where you tweet, I will follow.
What
do you have to plug? Where can people find you?
You can find me at A Goldmund on Twitter, A-G-O-L-D-M-U-N-D. You can find my show at Reply All on Twitter. You can find our website at replyall.limo or replyall.diamonds. Replyall.com was too expensive.
Is it really replyall.limo?
And replyall.diamonds. And replyall.fail. And we're working on replyall.pizza.
That's so amazing. And it's such a great podcast. I listen to it. I love it. So please check it out. Alex and PJ do such great work. And you know us at Kevin T. Porter at Electro Lemon. Follow the show at Gilmore Guys Show. And we're going to be doing shows in your town hopefully soon. Maybe, maybe, maybe. And that's been it for this episode of Gil Mail Guys. Or...
Email a Gilmail.
The special New York edition for which I'll play this old gem. Welcome to New York. And that's it. Here we go. We'll sing it out.
La 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 la.
With Alex Goldman.
Email a Gilmail and also Rory Gil.
Hell yeah. Rory Gil.
And Lorelai Gilmail.
And some Kirk Gilmail too. Oh, my bones.
Snail mail Gilmail.
Yes. Goodbye, guys.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.